Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Brief History of Korea, Isolation, War, Despotism, and Revival, The Fascinating Story of a Resilient but Divided People, by Michael J. Seth, narrated by Sean Runette. Introduction. Away from the world's main crossroads, in the shadow of China and Japan, Korea was a land little known outside of East Asia. It was one of the last countries in the world to be visited by Westerners. The first book in English on Korea, William Griffiths's Korea, The Hermit Nation, published in 1882, was written by an American in Japan who had never been to Korea or met any Westerner who had. Long after it had been opened to the outside world, Korea seldom drew much attention. The scarcity of books on Korea testified to the lack of interest held in the West and much of the rest of the world for this peninsular land in Northeast Asia. In recent years, however, this has changed considerably. South Korea has attracted attention with its breathtakingly fast transformation from poverty to prosperity, its globally popular smartphones and other products, and its vibrant entertainment industry. And who hasn't heard about North Korea? Or doesn't recognize the image of its young dictator with a weird haircut. Yet Korea is still not very well understood by most outsiders. The existence today of two very different Koreas only adds to the challenge of comprehending this ancient land, and how different they are. South Korea is a wealthy, high-tech center of international industry and entertainment. Its people are among the world's most diligent travelers. Few countries have such a high percentage of population trotting across the globe each year. It is an open, democratic country. Indeed, one of the most democratic countries in Asia. Seoul, its capital, is a dynamic, hyper-modern city. Then there is North Korea, the world's most isolated state, the only one whose ordinary citizens are not allowed access to the World Wide Web, the one place without Coca-Cola. An impoverished society whose people suffer from high rates of malnutrition and live under what is arguably the world's least democratic, most repressive government. How did it happen that one of the world's oldest and most ethnically homogeneous states developed into such two different societies in a couple of generations? How can we explain why they are developed along paths that were not only radically different, but both very unusual? And just who are the Koreans anyway? How are they different from Chinese and Japanese? How does their story fit into the larger narrative of the history of humanity? These are a few of the questions that this book will try to address. At the same time, it presents the story of Korea, which is interesting in itself. There are many good tales in the history of this ancient land. This book will tell some of them. Shaped like a rabbit. The geography of Korea. Korea looks small, sitting next to China and Russia on the world map, but it's not so small. It has a population of 75 million people, 50 million in South Korea and 25 million in North, making for a total somewhat larger than Britain's and a little smaller than Germany's. North Korea covers about the same area as England or New York State, while South Korea is a little smaller. In its entirety, Korea is roughly equivalent in area to Great Britain. Koreans say that their country is shaped like a rabbit, with the northeast forming the long bunny ears. It also resembles Italy in that it is mostly a long peninsula anchored to the mainland in the north by a mountainous region. The country is some 1,000 kilometers, 620 miles long, and averages about 200 kilometers, 124 miles in width. A great chain of mountains, the Taepaek Range, covers most of the northeast and runs like a spine along the eastern part of the country. The Taepaek Range has spurs. The most important of these, the Sopek Range, forms an arc separating the southeast region from the other parts of the country. The mountains are not high, reaching only 2,000 meters, 6,562 feet in South Korea, and over 2,700 meters, 8,858 feet on North Korea's border with China, but are rugged enough to hinder overland travel. Most of the country's rivers flow from this eastern spine westward into the Yellow Sea. There are no broad plains. In fact, no matter where you go in Korea, you are in sight of mountains. Because it is a well-defined peninsula, bordered on the north by mountains and on three sides by the sea, Korea forms a distinctive geographical area attached to, but not integrated into, the mainland of Asia. Its current borders, that is, of North and South Korea together, were formed 6 centuries ago. Since then, the end of the Korean world has been the Paektu or Baektu Mountain, a 2,744-meter, 9,003-foot volcano, and the two rivers that flow from it, the Tyumen River, which heads northeast and empties into the East Sea, Sea of Japan, and the Yalu River, which flows southwest to the Yellow Sea. Despite its modest size, there is a considerable temperature range, from the long, bitter, cold winters in the northeast that would challenge the most rugged New Englander, to the milder winter on the southern coast, where it only occasionally becomes cold enough to snow. The weather changes dramatically with the seasons. In the winter, dry, cold air from Mongolia and Siberia spreads over the peninsula, often accompanied by frigid winds. In the summer, the great landmass of Asia heats up, sucking in moist air from the Pacific and thus bringing about the summer monsoons. This is when the country receives the better part of its rain. Most of the country becomes a tropical steam bath, with heavy downpours that bring only a brief respite from the heat. The arable land in Korea is limited, but fertile and well-watered. As a result, for much of its history, it has been fairly densely populated. The people are mostly concentrated in 4 rice bowls, the largest pockets of good farmland, consisting of the Nakdung Basin in the southeast, in an area known as Gyeongsang, the southwest area of Chola, the Han Basin, near the center of the peninsula where Seoul lies, and the Daedong Basin, in the north where Pyongyang, North Korea's capital, is situated. As the Nakdung Basin, Chola, and most of the Han Basin are in the south, with the Daedong Basin and a small part of the Han Basin in the north, South Korea has most of the good agricultural land. The seas around Korea are rich in sea life, so fish, squid, and other ocean products have been an important part of the diet. However, Koreans are mountain people, not sea people, and have historically not been much for seafaring. This might be surprising, since few live far from the ocean, but the seas around Korea, except for the south coast, are not friendly to navigation. The east coast has good harbors, but is cut off from the populated areas by mountains. The west coast has shifting sandbars, barely immersed reefs, and some of the world's highest tides, making navigation tricky at best. In pre-modern times, immigrants came from the forests and plains of the north, high culture from China in the east, and invaders from all directions. Koreans have called themselves a shrimp among whales, meaning they are a small country surrounded by much bigger ones. These include China, which for the past 2,000 years has been the world's most populous country and one of the most territorially massive, Japan, which has historically had about 3 times Korea's population, and the vast continental empire of Russia. In earlier times, before Russia spread all the way east, the whale, to the north, was one of various nomad empires such as the Mongols and the Manchus. Furthermore, while China's northeast region of Manchuria shares the Korean border today, for most of its history this region was not Chinese, but part of the steppe and forest peopled by some of the world's most formidable warrior groups. However, China was close enough to be the source of most of Korea's ideas about government, society, art, literature, and religion. The 185-kilometer, 115-mile Korea Strait separates the peninsula from the Japanese archipelago, just wide enough to make these very different lands, but narrow enough to ensure frequent interaction. In fact, Korea has often been a bridge between Japan and the mainland. Sometimes this has meant that Korea acted as an emissary, bringing Chinese-derived culture to Japan. At others, it meant that Japan viewed Korea as its avenue to a continental empire. In any event, this is Korea, a geographically compact peninsula, fertile enough to support a large agricultural population, a land isolated enough by mountains and seas to develop its own culture and society, but also close enough to China to be powerfully influenced by it. Modest in size, it has at all times been under the threat of conquest and absorption by its powerful neighbors. Yet Korea has somehow managed to maintain its political autonomy most of the time, and its distinctive culture and identity, always. A note on romanization. The Korean writing system, called Hangul, works well for Korean, but it is difficult to convert into the Roman alphabet. Having no tones, the Korean sound system in no way resembles or sounds like Chinese. The two are completely unrelated, but it is radically different from European languages as well. The sounds are tricky. There are three different K sounds and three ch, p, and t sounds, as well as two S sounds. Furthermore, the same letter can be pronounced differently depending on the sound that precedes or follows it, so the problems multiply. For many years, there was no standard way of romanizing Korean. For example, the common names romanized as Lee, L-E-E, Yee, Y-I, and Ri, R-H-E-E, and the less common ones written Lai, L-I-E, and Ri, R-I, are all the same name. This author remembers traveling along a highway that led, according to the signs, to Sorak Mountain, but later the road signs began to refer to Siolago Mountain. One provincial government wrote the name of this rocky, beautiful, and popular mountain in one way, the next in another. American scholars developed the McCune-Reischauer system for writing Korean in the Roman alphabet, and this gradually became the accepted practice in scholarly literature. Then in 2000, the South Korean government came up with the revised romanization system. Now writers on Korea have two systems to choose from, which presents quite a dilemma, since they can be quite different. In this book, I have chosen to use the revised romanization system, even though I have used McCune-Reischauer in my other books, in the belief that this newer system is likely to become the more common one in the near future. In some cases, when a person or thing is more widely known by a different spelling, I use that one. Chapter 1. Origins. Bears, Gods, and Mountains. The Mythical Origins of Korea. According to popular legend, Korean history began almost 5,000 years ago when the deity Wanung descended from heaven to a high mountain. There he was approached by a tigress and a she-bear who wished to become human. Wanung gave them each some sacred herbs and cloves of garlic and asked them to stay out of the sun for 100 days. The she-bear climbed into her den as requested and stayed there. But the tigress became restless and ventured out after a few days. Clearly, the she-bear was more trustworthy, and in the spring, Wanung transformed her into a woman and had intercourse with her. As the story goes, on October 3, 2333 BCE, their son Hangun founded the first Korean state, which was called Kocho-sun. The date on which Hangun's kingdom was established marks the beginning of Korean history and is still a national holiday in South Korea. Modern tradition has identified the mountain where Hangun was born as Mount Paektu, which lies on the border of Korea and China. Koreans today are proud of having 5,000 years of history. This claim is based on the founding of Hangun's kingdom, plus a generous rounding off. First recorded in the 13th century, during a time when Korea was being overrun by the Mongols, the Hangun myth has reinforced in Koreans a belief that they are an ancient and distinct people with their own history. The myth identifies what it means to be Korean, starting with their love of mountains. Mountains in Korea are sacred places where shamans still perform rituals. Important Buddhist temples are located in the mountains, so Buddhists, as well as shamanists, go off to the mountains to pray. Furthermore, almost every Buddhist temple has a shrine to Shanshin, the mountain spirit. Today, Koreans celebrate mountains mostly by climbing them. Hiking is a national pastime. Koreans are ardent hikers. No matter where one goes in Korea, there is always a mountain in sight, and a hiking trail up it not far away. The mountain associated with Hangun, Mount Paektu, Whitehead, is Korea's most sacred. Mentioned in South Korea's national anthem and depicted on North Korea's national emblem, Mount Paektu was regarded as special by the Manchus and other Northeast Asian peoples as well. It towers over the area with a small crater lake called Chunchi, Heaven Lake, at the top. The Hangun myth therefore places the origins of the Korean people at the border with Manchuria. This is not far from the historical truth, since almost all modern Koreans are at least partially descended from Manchurian tribes. The garlic that the god gave the she-bear is significant to the Korean identity as well. Koreans boast the highest per capita consumption of garlic in the world. Important as it may be, not every Korean historian began the story of his land with Hangun. Some started with the story of Kicha, a relative of the last Shang Dynasty Chinese emperor who fled to the Korean peninsula when the dynasty fell in 1122 BCE. According to this legend, it was Kicha who introduced agriculture, sericulture, silk-making, literature, and all the refinements of civilization to the Korean people. He went on to rule the Korean state of Kochosan. For historians who emphasized this story, Korean history began when Koreans became civilized. Furthermore, the Kicha story linked their society with that of ancient China, which was regarded as the home of true civilization. From China flowed ideas about religion, ethics, government, law, art, and literature, and it was from China that Korea acquired literacy. In modern times, Korean nationalists were uncomfortable with the Kicha myth, since it suggested that Korean culture was derivative rather than original, and subservient to outsiders rather than independent. Hangun, by contrast, appealed to nationalists, as it supported their belief in Korea being home to a unique people with a culture older than China's. Today, Hangun is celebrated in both Koreas, as a myth and symbol in the south, and as a real historical ruler in the north, while Kicha is nearly forgotten. Yet both myths contain important elements for understanding the facts of Korean history. Hangun represents the Korean people's connection to the mountains, forests, and plains of Northeast Asia. Kicha, the enormous impact China had on shaping their culture. Cul-de-sac and springboard. Early migrations of peoples into the peninsula. Who were the first Koreans? For thousands of years, people migrated from Manchuria into the Korean peninsula. For some, the peninsula was a cul-de-sac where they settled permanently. Others took to the sea, using the peninsula as a springboard to the lush Japanese islands. The 185 kilometers, 115 miles, that separate the southern part of the peninsula from the nearest of Japan's four main islands was close enough that some people crossed the Korea Strait. DNA analysis, reinforced by archaeological evidence, indicates strong links between the ancient peoples of Korea and Japan. It is possible that some of the migrations went both ways, with people mingling on both sides of the straits. We should not think of early Korea, Japan, and the mainland of Northeast Asia as self-contained areas, but rather as places where people and cultures mixed and overlapped. The peoples who migrated into what is now Korea discovered a land nearly covered with forests that provided a rich variety of food sources, not only game animals, but also acorns, chestnuts, and edible plants, including arrowroot, turnips, onions, and wild millet. The coastal areas teemed with fish, shellfish, and squid. Pottery, which is usually associated with agricultural societies, since hunters and foragers on the move did not carry pots, appeared 10,000 years ago, several thousand years earlier than in the Middle East or Europe. This suggests an environment with a sufficient abundance of wild plants and game to support at least a semi-sedentary population. Village life began in earnest, however, with the domestication of millet and pigs some 6,000 or 7,000 years ago, possibly as the result of Chinese influence. These were important additions to the people's diet. But the real transformation to a densely populated agricultural land began with the introduction of rice. The reign of rice, the introduction of agriculture, and the rhythms of Korean life. Korean society as we know it from historical records begins with rice cultivation. Rice is the chief staple of the Korean diet. The word for cooked rice in Korean, pap, also means meal. A Korean lunch or dinner or even breakfast consists of rice and banchan, dishes eaten with rice. Koreans ate other grains, including barley, millet, and sorghum, but these were considered only poor substitutes for rice. When there was plenty of rice at every meal, life was good. When there was not enough and one had to eat other coarse grains, or not much at all, life was hard. The most common form of rice in Korea is the short-grained, sticky japonica or sinica variety, which was probably introduced from China 4,000 years ago. It thrives in the Korean climate. Planted in the spring, it grows rapidly during the hot, humid summer monsoons and ripens in the sunny, dry weather that follows in the fall. It yields well when planted in dry fields, but yields more when transplanted into wet paddies. Small streams along the mountain and hillsides can be channeled into wet rice paddies, part of the complicated rice-growing techniques that took many generations to perfect. Flat land is limited, but what is available contains nutrient-rich alluvium that rice and other crops thrive in. As yields increased, more people could be fed. This is how Korea, a small mountainous country, was able to support a fairly large population. Though the process of converting the forest to rice fields was a slow one, by 1000 BCE, agricultural villages dotted the land. Since the cultivation and cooking of rice are so basic to the rhythm of life in Korea, one could say Korean culture began around this time. These early people left no written records. We don't know what they called themselves or what language they spoke, but they did leave behind something to remember them by. Megalithic structures called dolmens. These often resembled a table with legs and a flat top, while others are reminiscent of an upside-down patuk, go set, with the pieces on the bottom and the board on the top. Koreans were not the only ones to build these stone structures. Dolmens dating from around the same time are also found in nearby parts of Manchuria and northern China, as well as in parts of Europe. No Korean megalith on the scale of Stonehenge has been found, but the numbers are amazing. More than 10,000 dolmens have been found throughout the country, far more than anywhere else in the world. Around 700 BCE, bronze came into use for making daggers, mirrors, and other objects. By 300 BCE, iron objects were being used. Such artifacts from Korea are similar in style to earlier objects found in China, suggesting both had Chinese origins. Around the same time that iron implements emerged, Chinese sources began referring to a Joseon kingdom, now called Gochoson or Old Joseon by modern historians, to distinguish it from the later Joseon dynasty that ended in 1910. This, of course, is the same state that, according to much later accounts, was founded by Han Kun. Some assert that the name Joseon is derived from the Chinese Chaoshen, written with the character Chao meaning dawn or morning, and Shen meaning fresh or calm. This has been translated into English, with some literary license, as Land of the Morning Calm, a title bestowed upon Korea by earlier authors that still appears in tourist literature. From the Chinese perspective, Korea is to the east, near the dawn or the quiet early morning, so it has long been assumed that the Korean pronunciation of these characters was the origin of the name Joseon, also written as Joseon, which is the official name of North Korea. North Koreans call themselves Joseon Saram, or Joseon people, that is, Koreans. That name is used in South Korea as well, but not officially. Recent scholarship suggests a less colorful explanation, that the name Chaoshan, Joseon, was simply the Chinese attempt to pronounce the name of an indigenous Korean people. We know next to nothing about the early Korean state of Gochoson. We think it was centered in the Liaoning region of southern Manchuria at first, and then moved to northern Korea, with its capital, Gwangyeom, at the site of modern-day Pyongyang. Gochoson likely had only the most rudimentary structures of a state. In fact, it may have been no more than a confederation of tribes. But it did have a king. The last king of Gochoson, Wukko, who is the first historically attested figure in Korean history, appears to have blocked or tried to monopolize trade between Wudi, the Han Emperor of China, and the tribal peoples of the area, becoming such an annoyance that in 109 BCE, Wudi invaded Gochoson. The hapless Wukko, facing one of the mightiest military forces of the day, was murdered by his own ministers, who then submitted to Chinese rule in 108. Thus, China entered the Korean Peninsula, and a new phase of Korean history began. Enter the Chinese. Early Chinese involvement and influence. With the arrival of the Chinese, Korean history took a major turn. From 108 BCE, parts of Korea were incorporated into the Chinese Empire. Chinese settlement and administration was located in the northeast, again centered in the vicinity of present-day Pyongyang. This area, called Leilang by the Chinese and Nangnang by the Koreans, was part of China for more than four centuries. It was a remote frontier outpost of the empire that had two main purposes. One was to promote trade with the tribal peoples of Northeast Asia, Manchuria, Korea, and even distant Japan. The other was to keep an eye on them. In addition to Chinese soldiers and officials, there were some Chinese settlers, but the population was mostly a mix of various people. From the Eastern Barbarians, as the imperial annals called the Koreans, the Chinese imported wood, fish, salt, iron, and agricultural products in exchange for porcelain, silk, jade, bronze mirrors, and other luxury goods for the tribal elites. Along with Chinese products, the Eastern Barbarians also acquired artisan skills and ideas about how to organize society. It was during this period that we can first put a name to the peoples that lived in and around Korea. According to a document from the 3rd century CE, there were 9 Eastern Barbarian peoples, meaning non-Chinese, living east of China. Among these were the Wa in the Japanese islands and several peoples who lived mainly in Manchuria, including the Puya, a powerful tribal federation. For Korean history, the most important of the Eastern Barbarians were the Goguryeo and the Han. The Goguryeo, a federation of warrior tribes, lived just north of Yalu River. Skilled horsemen and archers, they were culturally related to the nomads of the great Eurasian steppe, from whom they may have been descended. The Goguryeo first appear in Chinese records around 75 BCE as a group engaged in peaceful trade. However, from the 1st century CE, they began to gradually move south, raiding northern Korea and stirring up trouble for the Chinese in the process. Not surprisingly, Chinese records speak negatively of the Goguryeo, describing them as volatile, emotional, difficult, and dangerous folk. South of the great Han River, where modern Seoul sits, were the Han peoples, the Mahan, the Jinhan, and the Paeonghan. All spoke the same language, which is ancestral to modern Korean. Indeed, Koreans today, especially in the south, see themselves as direct descendants. Hanguk, Han country, one of the common names for Korea, is the official name of South Korea. South Koreans often call themselves Hanguk-saram, Han country people, whereas North Koreans call themselves Joseon-saram. But both terms, Joseon and Hanguk, are common names for Korea. The three Han groups were farmers who grew barley and rice, raised pigs, plowed with oxen, and lived in small villages. They had earthen homes that were half underground, making them cooler in summer and easier to warm in winter. The Chinese describe them as fond of drinking and dancing, a reputation that Korean farmers still hold. They were organized into kuo, the word for kingdom, but were only tiny chiefdoms consisting of a chief who controlled a few villages, not really states. The Mahan, the most numerous group, lived in the fertile farmlands of the southwest and were divided into 54 kuo. The Jinhan occupied the fertile upper and middle parts of the Naktong area of the southeast, and the Pyonghan, the lower Naktong basin. Both were divided into 12 kuo. Thus, the Han had settled in the two southernmost of Korea's four rice baskets, while the Chinese controlled the northern Taedong Basin. The Han River Basin was a sort of neutral territory. The semi-nomadic Goguryeo were on the northern fringes of Korea, and a few less numerous tribal peoples lived in the northeast. This was the situation when the Chinese Empire began to disintegrate. Like its contemporary, the Roman Empire, the mighty Han Chinese state went into decline and was overrun by barbarians, and then disintegrated. After 220 CE, the empire broke up into three kingdoms. The northernmost of these, the Wei Kingdom.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?